This book chronicles Tennessee disasters, both natural and man-made, almost since the state's creation in the 1700s. But for many of those early accounts, there was not a consistent narrative. There were not accurate records kept, especially about meteorological disasters like tornadoes or floods. The records just don't exist. But yet you had to create a narrative out of those bits and pieces of information. Tell me a little bit about how difficult it was to do that kind of research for the book when you had just kind of scattered and sometimes inconsistent or contradictory reports.
Well, to start out, I started working for the Tennessee Emergency Management Agency, and I was a technical writer for them and a natural hazards planner. And the director of the agency asked me to write a short history for the Tennessee Outdoor Tennessee Emergency Management Plan. And so I went down to the State Library and Archives and asked them, and they said, well, we don't have a list of disasters. If you can tell us about a particular disaster, we can help you with it. We need a place and a date. And so that started the journey. I realized there was nothing there, so I started to create it. And 27 years later, I had compiled a chronology of disasters that have occurred over, as you say, last 200, 300 years. And what I would do is go to, let's say, newspaper articles. Once I had the list of the disasters that I got from various sources, I went to the newspapers, and I would go back, and if I looked at a newspaper in 1956, for example, on a particular disaster, the article would generally refer to this disaster as bad as or worse than the disaster back in an earlier year. And so I went back to that earlier year, and that newspaper also usually gave me two or three leads to, you know, disasters that happened before that. So over a course of time, I was able to just start filling the blanks as far as having the information, not just the date and time, but the information on the disaster.
Tennessee has seen some disasters in its past that, quite frankly, are amazing in their scope. And I'm thinking here of the massive earthquakes that affected West Tennessee in 1811, 1812, a flood in Chattanooga in 1867 that put downtown Chattanooga under 4 to 8 feet of water. So obviously, if those kinds of events happened in exactly the same manner today, the damage to the modern-day cities of Memphis or Chattanooga or Nashville or Knoxville would be incredible. What can we learn from disasters of the past that can help us sort of understand how to prepare for disasters today and in the future?
We generally don't learn from history. That's one of the failures, I think, of humankind. We tell ourselves three lies. It can't happen here. It can't happen to me. And once it's happened, it can't happen again. So I would say if we take the lessons from this form of disasters, then we're ahead of the game. The federal government has done a lot in trying to tame rivers, like the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers putting levees and flood walls up, and of course, the National Weather Service being able to tell us in advance if we're going to get a severe flood or a flash flood or some incident like that, some severe weather. So I think we've got, in modern days, a way of being able to tell that the disasters are coming that we didn't have back then. It's impossible to really look at, let's say, Knoxville's million-dollar fire and say that was not very bad because it was only $1 million worth of damage. If you look at that in modern money, we find that it's like billions of dollars in comparison.
In a lot of those instances, there were actually no accurate economic measurements taken. For instance, the flood in downtown Chattanooga in 1867, we don't really know the true cost of that because so much damage was done and nobody was counting dollars so much as they were trying to rebuild the city. Has that been difficult for you as you've been doing your research and sort of putting modern day figures onto older disasters because those records simply weren't kept?
Yeah, I use it as a calculator, an inflation calculator. The only way you can really rank things in hierarchical order is to look at the cost that would be today. If you, like I said, you take the million-dollar flood and look at it today, and it's a lot more, and that way you can kind of rank them.
Not all the disasters chronicled in your book are works of nature. Some of them are, in fact, the works of man, either engineering failures like bridge collapses or dam collapses, things like that. Tell us about some of the nature of man-made disasters as opposed to natural disasters.
Well, I've listed in the book natural, technological, and societal disasters. The natural disasters, you know, are like floods, tornadoes, and so forth. The technological are transportation accidents, structure fires as opposed to wildland fires, hazardous material incidents, things like that. And then the societal disasters, of course, are like, you know, mass lynchings. There are hate crimes. There are things that man has done to man. There's quite a division there between those three.
And how is it when you talk to people? Of course, we always think of disasters as being things that fall from the heavens and destroy communities, or you know, a bridge failure or something like that. But when you talk about societal disasters, as you put it, what man does to man, do you find it's hard to communicate with people on that level who don't think of things like that as being disasters?
Yeah, probably so. Whenever you have lives lost, massive loss of life, injury, structure damage, infrastructure damage, then it's not necessarily a natural cause that did that. It could be a bunch of people decide to riot. In a definition of disaster, it's very difficult. It's a very subjective thing to try to describe what a disaster is. But there are some disasters like slow-rise floods that do tremendous property damage and yet may not kill or injure anybody. And on the other hand, you have historic epidemics that have killed scores or hundreds or even thousands of people, and yet there's been very little physical damage to the environment or to the built environment or the natural environment.
I want to talk specifically about one of those human disasters, and that was the Knoxville Race Riot of 1919. It was a big year for similar incidents. There were racial incidents in cities across the country in 1919. East Tennessee, of course, was not immune to the sort of mob mentalities that swept the nation that year. So if you would, give us kind of a brief sketch of that riot and its aftermath.
The Knoxville was not considered a city where that would happen. We had pretty good race relations here, primarily because we had a lesser black population than, say, Chattanooga or Memphis did. And so it was kind of surprising. But, yeah, a gentleman by the name of Maurice Mays was the person who the whole thing was blamed on. He is supposedly raped, had his way with a white woman. And that was often a cause of lynchings in the South. Very, very often it would cause lynchings. I've got a quote. On the night of his execution, Maurice Mays, a black man on death row, said, "I am to die to satisfy a few Republican politicians. Some Republicans told the governor that he'd lose 20,000 votes if he helped me." And that was from John Egerton, a case of prejudice relative to the Knoxville race riot of 1919. And I think that pretty well sums it up. It doesn't take much. It takes one match to start a major fire. It takes one person.
And there was also an incident that I found very interesting that happened down in McMinn County in 1946, right after the end of World War II. There was a political struggle that erupted into physical violence against people and against buildings and cars and structures, and it was actually called the Battle of Athens. Tell us a little bit about the Battle of Athens.
Well, the Crump machine out of Memphis, political machine, was pretty much running the state. He had a lot of influence everywhere, and his people were not just in Nashville itself or in Memphis, but actually across the state. And people that were connected with him had taken over political office in Athens, in McMinn County, and they were pretty well running it. But it was not, there were never fair elections. There was always some way that they influenced the election. So when the GIs returned from overseas after World War II, they decided that something's wrong here, something's bad wrong, and we're going to take our city back. So they ran on the GI Bill, some of their people, and the sheriff came in with a whole bunch of deputies that he'd hired outside and brought them in to kind of make sure that the ballot boxes were, you know, safe and not tampered with. And then they picked them up and took them to the jail so that they could do the counting. And it was not a fair election. So the GIs came in, and they actually laid siege to the jail. And they broke into the local armory. They got dynamite. They got weapons. And they just kept shooting and throwing dynamite until the people inside just gave up and came out. And then they were able to count the ballots and realize the GIs had won.
What was the aftermath of that? I know it's not an incident that we talk too much about these days, but what an amazing political struggle that happened there just down the interstate in Athens. I mean, what are the modern-day ramifications of that? Were any permanent lessons learned? Was that the end of the Crump machine, as you were talking about?
It was a downfall of the Crump machine. It was a time when people felt that they had taken government back. And I think that was the main thing, is that we then had fair elections there. And, of course, this whole thing spread across the state until it happened in other places, but probably not as violently as it did in Athens.
Tennessee is a state, it seems, that is quite susceptible to flooding. Throughout its history, we've had records of floods along the Holston, the French Broad, the Tennessee, the Cumberland, the Sequatchie, the Mississippi. It's a state laced with rivers, and the rivers sort of giveth and taketh away. They give commerce and transportation and communications to all these cities, and then also, of course, have the tendency to fight back occasionally. They lash out with the floodwaters. Do you think that that is the most common sort of disaster in Tennessee, flooding? Because it seems like in this book there's a lot of accounts of flooding very frequently through the state's history.
Yeah, flooding was a lot worse years ago. You say that you talked about the Chattanooga flood of 1867. That flood would not happen today because the Tennessee Valley Authority and U.S. Army Corps of Engineers have created artificial impoundments on all the major rivers, the Cumberland, the Tennessee. The only large natural lake in Tennessee is Real Foot Lake up in the northwest corner. And so they're able to route those floods slowly and safely down the valley. And so we don't have the destruction we once had. We still have the flash floods, which will occur periodically from the side streams that have not been dammed. But we've got a very, very good state now because of the work of TVA, not only creating the dams, but also some of the other works they did to stop the erosion on the land before that water even got in to fill the reservoirs.
A little earlier in this interview, you mentioned it took you 27 years from the genesis of this project to the publication of the book to compile this list of disasters and find the sources and write the stories. You essentially lived for almost 30 years in this sort of world of the Tennessee disaster. Now that you're out of it, now that the book has been published, what are your plans next?
Well, I'm working on several things. I published a book back in 99 on place names of the Smokies, which talked about how the various things, places in the park got their names. I have recently compiled a database of 9,322 populated places in Tennessee, past and present, and I'm attempting to find the origin of each of those names. I've written my first fiction book, and I'm working on my second fiction book now.
Alan Coggins is the author of Tennessee Tragedies. And Mr. Coggins, thank you so much for being with us on All Things Considered.
Thank you, Brandon.